Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of Movie Mastery. It's the podcast where we watch the movies you recommend, and we don't know what we're going to see until we sit down to watch it. I am your host, John. Over there, my co-host, Jeff.
I can do this no longer. My consciousness forces me.
Your consciousness?
Yes, my consciousness forces me to stay awake, and I don't want to.
Yeah, I can do it no longer.
Yeah, I can do it no further. Good night.
And sleep.
Yeah, I should have said conscience, but it's okay. I saved this. I saved this bit.
It's fine. The bit's okay.
I saved the bit. I saved Thanksgiving.
That's me. How the bit saved Thanksgiving.
Everything's fine. How are you?
We're all fine here. So this week, we rolled up a movie that I had actually seen before only as a child, called Mom and Dad Save the World.
I feel like I had to have seen this before because I remembered one of the monsters in it, like vividly, but nothing else.
See, I remembered one gag from the movie and like sort of the general idea.
And then it turned out that the movie contained no gags. And so you're very...
It turned out this movie has plenty of gags and no jokes.
Yeah.
The movie is a 92 film that has Terry Garr and John Lovitz. And
why is 92 kicking us in the dick so much recently?
I don't know. 92 just doesn't like us right now.
That's when Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me came out, too.
Ugh.
So we've just gotten a double dick kicking from 1992.
The whole thing with this movie is that it's bad, and not just like that we think it is bad. I actually went onto IMDb and pulled up a little bit of trivia about this. One, it was filmed in 1990 and it only released in 92.
Mm-hmm.
And it played in theaters for 1 week.
Jesus. I mean, the movie opens with a good 3 minutes of uninterrupted credits with no stuff going on behind them, which is never a good sign in a film.
No. And the other wonderful little bit of trivia from this, John Lovitz was forced to quit Saturday Night Live to work on this film.
Oh, good. I would have hoped that he at least would be able to stay on Saturday Night Live until he was forced to quit to work on Rhinestone Cowboy.
Nope. This was going to be shot between summer break and shooting overlapped for 2 weeks. And Lorne Michaels told him that he could not miss a single week on SNL, so he had to make a choice between SNL and this movie, and he chose this movie.
In 1992? What else was Lorne Michaels relying on? Was Charles Rocket, like, that good of a thing?
Hey, man.
92 is like the lost year of Saturday Night Live.
And there's a reason for that.
Yes. Because they kicked John Lovitz out right when it would have been good. I mean, that was the time. I think Chris Rock was still there, but everyone else was like, we were here for 2 years, and then they kicked us out because we forgot to put jokes in those seasons. And then they replaced them all with stand-up comedians who were all just jockeying for positions to do bits in.
No, looks like 92 was a good cast year.
What, was it Spade and shit?
So, you had Dana Carvey, Chris Farley, Phil Hartman, Mike Myers, Kevin Nealon, Rob Schneider.
Mm-hmm. Garmanarnar.
Al Franken.
A piece of toast.
Tim Meadows. Adam Sandler.
All right, fine. It's got a lot of the Brat Pack SNL era in it. I think I'm confusing the 92 season with the 90 season. Because 90, which would have been the time when he had to quit to film this, I think is the famous, unbelievably shit season of Saturday Night Live.
Let's take a sneaky peek.
Shall we take
at
a sneaky
at 1990?
Peek? Yeah, please do.
I'm gonna
got like Piscopo and Rocket and
Rocket Raccoon.
Rocket Raccoon. Well, anyway, while you're doing that, yeah, this movie is basically a whole list of characters to which Phil Hartman said no.
Pretty much.
If you wanted a way to boil this down.
So, I mean, we're gonna play some music and get into the full on spoiler review of this, but man, it's bad. It's a real bad movie.
I mean, it's a Jeffrey Jones vehicle. That's not a thing that anyone wants to
do, no.
or even wants to know as a thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. We are going to be back in just a few seconds, and we'll have the full review of Mom and Dad Save the World.
Just save a little wind. Surrender.
back, it's time to dig into Mom and Dad Save the World. Now, I would like to say, right off the bat, for a movie called Mom and Dad Save the World, there is almost no scenes with the kids.
Oh, yeah. It's Mom and Dad by way of these are kind of parent stereotypes. But they have two kids who are in the first 3 or 4 minutes of the film, and then
the last like 2 minutes of the film, and that is it. They don't go on the adventure with them.
They showed up again at the end. I was in the bathroom,
and all the better for it. You are,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, the fact that this is originally, again, looked up the trivia for this. It was just called Dick and Marge Save the World.
Mm-hmm.
But changing it to Mom and Dad Save the World really makes me feel like it should have been like the kids are there too.
I feel like that's a great chance for us to back convert and fix the names of some other movies. For example, would you prefer to see Mars Needs Dick?
I would love to see that.
Well, okay. So, yeah, there's parents at the very beginning. We have, the movie doesn't really open on them. It opens on horrible introduction to a stupid planet full of idiots.
Yeah, unfortunately, it gives us a little Eric Idle voiceover that's like, oh, there's a planet out here, and it was taken over by a guy, and everyone on the planet's an idiot, and it's a tiny planet, and they're all jealous of Earth, and oh no.
Yeah. And then one man ruled them all, and his name was Todd.
Yeah.
Todd Spingo. That's a funny name, don't you think, John?
That's the joke. That's the joke, is that his name is Todd.
Yeah, and his last name is the funny word Spingo.
Yeah.
That's a funny word.
How funny is that?
Yeah.
A word.
A word. It's hilarious.
And
that's the noble emperor of the tiny planet Moronicus, or whatever the planet was called, John Lovitz.
Ugh. So then, right before he uses his giant death laser to blow up Earth, he sees Terry Garr in
a grandma costume.
Like, just the worst, like, late 80s workout outfit.
I genuinely thought that this was supposed to be a joke, because we were watching it.
Well, yeah.
Like a YouTube print. We were watching a YouTube print, so it was all kind of a little bit blurry, just a tiny bit. And I thought, I didn't know it was Terry Garr. I thought he was like watching a Golden Girl workout in the backyard. And he was like, my God, she's beautiful. And I was like, oh, he's attracted to some woman in her like middle 60s. That must be a joke that they're gonna play off later. No, it's Terry Garr wearing 50 pounds of Far Side housewife makeup.
It's very weird to me that they decided to do that with Terry Garr. And I know that it's because they're like, ooh, we get to have a scene where she gets like made up and now she's being pretty.
Mm-hmm.
But the weird thing is, Marge, Terry Garr in this movie, has very short hair.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they like do the whole makeover thing, it just is long now.
Well, yeah, these are stupid people. They invented a backwards haircut because they're idiots.
Yeah,
they can cut your hair longer.
Good. Good for them.
Yeah.
It's also one of those things where I'm like, oh, they have ridiculously advanced technology, even though the planet is supposed to be full of idiots.
Yes, yeah, they have lasers and junk. It's probably just that they've been there longer. I do like that they're like, here's your planet, and then let's go over a couple of like rings of the solar system to a slightly different one. Here's our planet, and these are the only two inhabited planets.
Yeah. So yeah, the emperor has named the planet Spango after him.
That's right.
And he hates Earth because
they're a bigger planet, yeah,
and more important.
So he's planning to destroy Earth, and his advisor, who I forget's playing his advisor, but it's some dude with a Wolverine haircut and like Civil War sideburns.
Thalmas Rasulala. Also, trivia, his last movie.
Oh, okay. Was it also his first movie?
I would assume not.
Okay. Well, he's like, sir, I have picked the perfect target to destroy the Earth. Woodland Hills, California.
That is the place where if we shoot our laser at it, we'll do the most damage to the planet.
And they're like, good, zoom in. Show me this Woodland Hills, California. Very good, sir. Here's a bunch of intercut helicopter tracking shots of Los Angeles. And then we finally get down there, and there's Terry Garr in a grandma costume working out by the pool.
Ugh, great. So then we actually go down and meet our titular mom and dad, Terry Garr and Jeffrey Jones, as Marge and Dick.
I didn't even know there was a movie that starred Jeffrey Jones.
I know, right?
This is...
I completely forgot. All I remembered was that Terry Garr and John Lovitz were in this.
Yes. Yeah, and I could have sworn that this movie was specifically the inspiration for the, you know, his whole liar bit where he's like, Terry Garr, whom I've seen naked. but they don't actually interact. They interact a lot in the movie, but they are not married or anything. Yeah, and then Jeffrey Jones playing Sad Sack Dick Nelson, or Wilson, Dick Wilson.
Nelson.
Nick Nelson.
Dick Nelson.
Dick Nelson.
Nick Nelson.
Nick Nelson.
Nick Nolte.
Yeah, Nick Schwartz. And he is a sad sack who doesn't like to do things or go places or eat food.
Yeah, he complains about everything, mm-hmm. and oh, his back hurts, and he's got indigestion, and oh, I don't want to go places. My knee hurts.
This pie is too rich for me to eat it.
Yeah, great.
Okay, so he's a dumb piece of shit,
and
fuck him.
Oh,
also,
yeah.
Also, he's a famous child porn guy, so great.
So, you know, great. There's that.
Also, he in every waking moment in his late career, like, you know what he looked like from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, so you're used to that, right?
Yeah.
He eventually gets bigger, like he's big and fat, and he's in, like, this and Legend of Sleepy Hollow, the Tim Burton one, and his eyes have bulged way out like a nervous chihuahua, and he just looks like he's always... It's a last known photo of a person who is shitting themselves to death. That is him all the time.
I mean, he does have the look of a man who is straining to get out a poop.
Yeah, no, he looks bilious. He looks sick on beef.
So, yeah, they show some slides to their kid and her boyfriend, and the boyfriend is... the older brother from Blossom.
Oh, how nice.
That's all I know him from.
How nice for everyone. It's some slides of them visiting, I don't know, somewhere.
It's like Mexico or something.
Yeah, and of course, Terry Garr's like, ooh, and then we tried a tortilla, and then we tried a guacamole. And he's like, I liked staying in the hotel because it's a hotel.
There was no weird foods or having to be outside here.
I mean, on the one hand... I really don't like Jeffrey Jones' character in this movie, and I kind of wish he was just dead. Like, the movie would be better if he was just a Don't Wake the... or
Don't Wake Daddy.
If he was just a Weekend at Bernie's corpse. But on the other hand, he's right about hotels being fucking rad.
I mean, hotels are rad, don't get me wrong.
There's no greater joy on vacation than going into your hotel room, turning the AC to refrigerator, and then just staying in there for seven uninterrupted hours for no reason.
Yep. That's the life.
That is the life.
Being able to just sit there and be like, oh, man, finally, I'm on vacation. I can sit in a room and watch TV, but it's slightly colder than it would be at home, this is great.
I'm going to close my blackout curtains all the way, and I'm going to turn on HBO and watch Arliss for 16 hours straight, and it's going to be 32 degrees in here. I'll go get a bucket of ice I don't need.
It turns out that it is their 20th wedding anniversary,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to go to Santa Barbara.
Uh-huh.
They pack up the car full of a ton of stuff, and there's only one bag for Dick, but Marge has like 20 bags, and she brings a coffee maker.
She brings the whole house everywhere she goes. It's a joke about how women pack a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, given that her character is defined as the kind of person who was always wearing track pants and a kitten shirt.
Yeah, she's mostly played to be like a... just like, suburban mom,
like
who's
I said,
like, yay!
She's basically a living embodiment of a Far Side housewife.
But then we get to meet the other child that they have, which is Budnick.
Oh, yeah, Budnick's in this movie.
Yeah.
Budnick's in this movie for two scenes. He doesn't get much more than one line in any of them.
Little Danny Cooksey gets to show up and be like, hey, I was Budnick, and I can skateboard. Goodbye.
Goodbye. I'm not going to do a thing again.
Yeah, I had one line, and then I'll say one more line at the end of the movie. Thank you. Goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go skate off and do nothing.
Every time you see me, you wonder what's up with Donkey Lips these days.
The answer is he's on the Something Awful forums.
Yeah, he is. And he's a cool dude, from what I understand.
So yeah, they pack up the car and they head out, and they're driving to Santa Barbara, and they're terrible. The two of them are just awful.
Yeah, because let's see, Jeffrey Jones's Dick's basic persona is that he's always worried about how food is too rich for him, but he is also always eating.
And he's just so put upon and whiny.
And his wife is very nice, but also very demanding and controlling.
Yes.
We see this because the two of them are driving down the freeway towards Santa Barbara, down the 110 specifically, and they see the road for the old Ojai Highway.
Yeah, and like, you've always wanted to take that. Let's take that.
And he's like, nope, I want to stay on a modern, dependable American freeway.
I'm not going to do any detours like this. End of discussion. No, cut to being on the Ojai.
Now they're on the Ojai, which is not as pretty as being on the PCH or the 110 on your way to the Santa Barbara.
Being on the 110 is very pretty going up, and being on Ojai is in the middle of fucking nothing.
Yeah, that was a bad decision. They could have been looking at the beach.
Sigh.
And especially in 1990 when it would have been possible to drive up the 110 without just sitting in the smog of someone else's car and just saying fuck quietly to yourself for 16 hours. Which, by the way, is what I like to do in a hotel room.
Yeah. Say fuck quietly.
Just sit there. Fuck, 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 fuck. Fuck, fuck. Man, it's cold in here. This is great.
See, the fact that it's like 80 degrees outside right now at night is why I believe we are dreaming so much about that nice hotel air conditioning.
We should just straight up go get a Motel 6 with two beds and just sleep in there for this evening.
I almost thought about doing that the other night because I got home and it was still like 81 degrees, and I'm just like, I can't live. Maybe I just go get a hotel. It's worth it to pay, like, I don't know, $50 or something, and be like, please let me just have an air-conditioned room.
Well, anyway, they go driving down this Ojai Highway when it's been decided that Todd Spingo of the planet Spingo will capture them using his magneto beam.
Yes, he'll turn on the magnetic beams and draw the car to him.
Yep.
And indeed it does. It flies through space and the car is fine in space.
Well, yeah, that's part of the magneto beam. It gives them air to breathe in space.
Sure, why not?
Otherwise known as the don't worry about it. Now, they're flying through space, and they have a bunch of arguments over what the proper camera alignment is to take a picture of Saturn or whatever, when all of a sudden their radio comes alive, and it's Todd Spingo giving them an evil spiel.
He's like, I am the Emperor of Spingo, and you are my guests, and don't worry about it.
Don't interrupt me, and don't try to turn off the radio.
I feel like it seems like we're just sort of glossing over things and saying what happens, except that's pretty much what the movie does.
Yeah, there's no actual jokes anywhere in here that we're missing. You think... I mean, you can probably tell from our inflection and vocal tone that this was a boring movie, but, I mean, this is supposed to be a comedy, and large stretches of it go by where just stuff occurs, and all the characters are talking all at once, but they're all... It's a lot like watching... It reminds me a lot of the Popeye movie, the Robert Altman Popeye.
Oh.
Where it's supposed to be Robert Altman's big comedy film, and you can tell it is because Popeye's in it, but everyone's just talking over each other about fucking nothing. And it's just, I'm taking a picture of Jupiter. Don't know how to take a picture of Jupiter. You're using flash in space. You've never taken a picture in space. You're like, where's the joke? Where's any joke?
Yeah, it's the problem is Dick and Marge as characters are annoying at best, which means I'm not like, this is fun bickering or clever bickering that you might have with, like, ooh, this is a couple that's, you know, their relationship is a little rocky maybe right now.
Yeah, maybe one of them is snappy and the other one's kind of a sad sack straight man or something, but they're both sad sacks.
Yeah, it's just two sacks in space being dumpy at each other, and it's like, why? What? Who decided this was going to be the funny thing?
Yeah, this is like watching two Vogons have a movie about them. Except that'd be neat.
Except that would have some sort of interesting bits to it.
Yeah. Now we cut back to the planet or Spingo for a while so we can watch Lovitz do what he does in this movie, which is I kind of just generally be Three Stoogey towards his hench people and constantly try on wigs and fake mustaches and beards.
Yeah, the entire characterization of Emperor Todd is that Lovitz gets to be campy and put on a bunch of different hair pieces and outfits.
Yes.
And that's basically it. Like, he puts on a big, like, floofy pants jester version of, like, a Napoleon outfit at one point.
Yeah, his wedding outfit is pretty cute. It's the mix of white and black and dress and tuxedo at the same time. He has one character trait that I thought was probably going to have a fun payoff, but didn't, which was constantly asking for people to rate him on scales of 1 to 10 and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Every time he'd finish some royal decree, he'd be like, hold on. Now, in terms of intergalactic terror, where would you rate me at the moment?
Yeah, the whole movie is him basically just being insecure about his leadership and his planet and his looks and everything. But there's no good joke outside of, hey, am I good looking?
Yes, your emperorship. You are the most beautiful person in all the lands.
Oh, good. And that's it. That's the joke.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just sad. Mm-hmm. It's sad to me is what it is.
These movies that more or less star John Lovitz from the early 90s are, because the only other one I can think of that I had to watch was Rhinestone Cowboy. It's the same thing. He plays this high school principal who has to dress up like a, you know, in a rhinestone cowboy outfit and do some stuff. And it's just him being like, yes, I'm John Lovitz, which, boy, John Lovitz is great in small doses.
Yeah. John Lovitz is great as a character that shows up in other things.
Yeah. Like, this movie would have been better if Phil Hartman had his role and he had Wallace Shawn's role.
And Wallace Shawn had Jeffrey Jones's role.
Mm-hmm. And Jeffrey Jones was in prison.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they land on the planet, and Todd tells them, like, ooh, I'm having a wedding. Okay, you're invited.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, great. Now, they land on the planet, and they're surrounded by guards, and Dick tries to get out and be like, you know, defensive. He's like, the wife stays in the car. Oh no, you touched me. My back hurts.
Yeah. The planet then has a weird thing about it in that up until this point, we've just seen humans. And then there are small, intelligent dog and fish people.
Yes, and they appear to be either the same species or close enough. Like, the females are all fish and the males are all dogs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. The weird thing for me is all of them are about the same height. They're all basically just
little people
in costumes.
Yeah.
Except for one fish lady who is very tall.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not understand what was going on here.
Yeah, the dogs basically look like Ugnaughts.
And the worst part is, they're just, I mean, let's not say it's the worst part, but about these costumes.
Well, they're not very mobile. They're very clearly just masks left over from some circus thing.
Yeah, and they can move the mouth a bit, but when they do, you see inside the mouth, and it's just like you can see the mesh in there.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, man, this is sad.
Yeah.
Why would you do this if you had these garbage costumes?
Like we were saying when we finished watching the movie, this is one where you can kind of imagine the sad pitch meeting that they had. Get a load of this. I've got no ideas, no interesting characters, no interesting sets, but I do need to film a movie with John Lovitz for about 60 days.
The weird thing for me is I could see it if they tried to go more in the direction of old 50s shtick sci-fi.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of the trappings of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like the sort of Flash Gordon-esque villain thing of like, oh, I'm the emperor in weird costumes and have like the mustache and bald head and whatnot, which Lovitz kind of does. You've got people out in the wilderness who are, you know, in just like loincloth outfits.
And there's room for sci-fi comedy that has this low of a budget, like the old TV show Hitchhiker's Guide or White Dwarf. Was done with this kind of low-budget comedy.
If the low-budget was part of it, if it was like, yeah, we're doing specifically a send-up of that type of genre, it just seems like they used some of the trappings, never acknowledged it, and didn't use it for anything.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, I've seen some sci-fi before, and we should put this in here without any thought for why it's in there.
Yeah. Well, okay, so the husband and wife are separated forcibly by guards. Terry Garr is taken off to a room full of fish monsters who were going to dress her up all pretty for a ball, while Terry Jones is dragged off by dog people.
Terry. You combined the two of them.
I created a new character, Terry Jones, from Monty Python.
There you go.
Yeah, no, so Geoffrey Jones is dragged off by dog people and thrown in prison where there's a Kowakian rat. Like, literally, just looks like the Kowakian lizard monkey from Star Wars, but more rat.
And it just imitates him?
For about three lines, he just keeps going, hey, let me out of here. Hey, let me out of here. Hey, you stop that. Hey, you stop that. And then he chases it away, and that's the end of that.
There is no point in the movie where this comes back.
No.
He does not use this for anything.
No.
And it's no jokes done.
And there's no jokes of any kind. If you think it's funny for a thing to copy a guy briefly, then this is the perfect joke.
Yeah, if that's what you believe is funny, then you'd probably enjoy this movie. I mean, I figure that's why I enjoyed it as a kid, is because I was like, ha ha, that rat is talking like him. I'm like six, and I'm an idiot.
I like copying things that people say as well, you rat. I understand you. You and I are friends.
They said that everyone on this planet is stupid, and that guy ran into a wall. Ha ha, that is a funny joke.
I hope that that rat likes dinosaurs, because I like dinosaurs.
Then we could be friends.
Hmm. So, that happens for a couple of minutes until the rat is chased away. Ha ha. And then it turns out there's someone else in the cell as well.
Yeah, Eric Idle. Eric Idle is here, and he's the deposed king, Raph.
Mm-hmm.
And he has lost his memory from being in prison for so long, and they zap his brain.
They've given him a big old beardy beard, and he basically does some pretty good Eric Idle-style shtick. Pretty good.
I mean, it's Eric Idle. He at least, even though the lines he has aren't good, you're like, you're giving it all you've got, though.
Yeah, because his lines, he does the whole, am I actually talking out loud? Yes, you are. Good, let me know when I've stopped.
You've stopped.
Ah, very good. Then you are hearing me. It was okay.
I mean, it wasn't funny, but no. I was like, you're doing a good shtick here.
Yeah.
Like, at least you're bringing some life to the character you have.
Yeah. He instructs Geoffrey Jones. Oh, sorry, I should just say Dick. He instructs Dick to root around in his pants.
He's like, "Open my pants. There's vital information."
And Dick's like, "I haven't been in prison long enough for that yet."
Ha ha, gay.
Get it? Cause the gay bows.
Eventually he does indeed reach in there and find some paper in his pants.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, you have to find my son, Sickle.
You gotta find Circ
of the White Bird.
Yeah, find the White Bird, Circ.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, great. All right. The other thing about this movie is that the characters are sad sacks, but also they take everything that's going on just as is. He's not like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm on an alien planet in a prison. This sucks. He's just like, yeah, whatever. Find your son and the White Bird. Uh-huh.
And
where can I get a cup of coffee in this joint? My back hurts.
Thing is, if it was actually that emphasized, it would be more humorous than it is, because fucking Jones doesn't really bring anything to his role at all.
No, other than eye-popping ham face.
And Terry Garr really isn't doing anything because her character doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
And all you really have to go on in this movie for anything like that is John Lovitz. And as we have established, he is good for some hammy shtick for a couple minutes, and then you're like, yeah, I get it.
No, because it's the same hammy shtick for the entire rest of the movie.
Yeah.
He's constantly trying on wigs.
And that's great. So they take Dick over to be like mind tortured, because he's like, ooh, I'm gonna find out how to make Marge love me by reading Dick's mind. And
so, yeah, Wallace Shawn has a machine that he can use to read the minds of people. And then in this movie, he plays a character who has a similar machine.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Wallace Shawn is in this movie as Seabor, because he was the person who got the as in the credits.
Yeah.
And Seabor is like the royal torturer who has to use a machine that reads a ticker tape parade of information about what's going on in Dick's head. But also what's on Dick's head is on a big TV screen behind him.
Yeah, so we get his thoughts printed out on a ticker tape and then also displayed visually with no audio up on a screen.
And then also teleported or beamed or telepathically attuned directly into Wallace Shawn's head.
Because
he freaks out at the end and he's like,
yeah, I know, but that's because he lost his love.
Oh, okay.
That's what was happening.
Yeah, I thought it was because he was freaking out a little bit from the effects of the mind meldings.
No.
Maybe also yes.
He is just reading the tape.
But also yes, maybe.
But no.
Okay.
No, but.
Maybe, though.
Wallace Shawn reads the mind ticker tape thing. And Dick gets angry and is like, oh, I love Marge and I've got to save her. And
also, my back hurts and I hate this place. And I don't like that emperor very much.
I'd punch him in the face.
I would punch him in the face. But I'm pretty sure that if I did that, he'd punch me in the face.
So at the end of this, he's going to be sent back to be like executed or whatever. But Wallace Shawn is like, oh, I'm going to help you escape because I know what it's like to love deeply like you obviously do.
Yeah.
I lost my love, and I can't see it happen to someone else.
He wasn't going to be taken anywhere. He was going to be murdered by a huge syringe full of green ooze.
Ah, the green ooze.
Remember that? It was just a huge cartoony syringe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, Wallace Shawn collapses on him, crying about his lost love, and then's like, you and I'll switch outfits so you can escape.
Yeah, you can dress up like a destroyer and then get out of here. And indeed, the joke here is Wallace Shawn is smaller than Jeffrey Jones.
So Jeffrey Jones looks like a fat man in a little coat.
Hey, that outfit doesn't fit you.
He looks ridiculous.
What amazing humor.
The humor is out of this world. Now, of course, the planet's all idiots, so when he runs into some guards and they're like, who are you? Zerk? What are you doing? Patrolling? Where? North. All right, keep it up.
Yeah, great.
But then he's spotted by the major domo guy, the guy with the Wolverine haircut, who is clearly the smartest person on the planet.
Yeah. Now, his name is General Afeer.
Mm-hmm.
Except the very first time that Lovitz said his name, mm-hmm, I thought he was saying General of Fear.
Oh yeah, like my Minister of Terror or whatever.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that's neat, the General of Fear. And I was like, oh, no, it's just Afeer, A-F-I-R.
Yeah, yeah. So they start chasing Jones, and he dives down a laundry suit and winds up in a sewer. I feel like we're going through this too fast.
We aren't.
Okay, good.
And there he finds some smiley mushrooms that are then evil.
Yeah, they have smiles on them, but the smiles are decoys because they actually have huge mouths.
And they hop around. It's all sharp and pointy in there, and they've got like alien-esque secondary mouths that also spit out from their mega mouth.
Now, they don't try to bite him or anything, but they do menace at him quite convincingly.
Yeah, and they'll hop towards him on their one leg.
Mm, so he runs away from them and gets stuck on a ladder over a giant pit to nowhere.
Yeah.
And that's that for him for now.
And because then he hears Marge.
Oh, I know. I was gonna go check in with Marge and then bring it up to that point.
Meh.
But whatever. Yeah, here's Marge. Marge, meanwhile, has been getting makeovers over and over again from fish ladies and introducing them to the concept of coffee and talking to them about their dog husbands.
Yeah, she talks about Dick and is like, oh, here's a picture of him and our kids. Mm. And then one of the fish people is like, ah, blah, 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 blah. Oh, is this your family? Oh, look at that dog, Blart.
Yeah,
Blart.
That must be Blart.
Is he a mall cop?
Is he a Paul Blart?
This is some Paul Blart you got here.
Perhaps he's a Paul Blart Mall Blart.
Maybe.
Perhaps he's a Paul Mall Bort. But it turns out that I think her name is Mart. Mart and Blart or whatever are having a sort of marital spat at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's got her upset.
And so she's like, oh, you know, I could talk to Blart for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just turns out that the guard that gets sent in to watch her is Blart.
Yes.
And so she has a whole conversation where it's like, you need to love your wife. You need to tell her that you love her. You know, I know it must be hard being a guard all the time.
Because they're all bulldogs.
Yeah, it's bulldogs and fish.
Yeah. And she's like, well, why don't you go tell her you love her right now? And then he runs off. Great.
Yeah, so she manages to escape, though immediately is spotted and has to run away.
Yeah, and she yells, Dick! Dick! And he hears her from the bottom of the shaft, and now we've done the thing I wanted to
and,
do.
And it gives him the motivation to actually pull himself up from the bottom rung of this ladder.
Because mm-hmm.
he's like, oh, doing a pull-up, I can't do that. And then he hears his wife's in trouble, and then he does.
Yeah, now...
The whole movie is basically about Dick overcoming the fact that he's a whiny little piece of shit to save his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if that was sort of the idea of this, and we went more serious with it, and actually were doing that, or anything... Like, there's... All of these little nuggets of like, oh, this is a theme or an idea that we've got. And then it just doesn't do anything.
Yeah, no, the movie feels static and an excuse for muggery. Now, there's several scenes of Lovitz shooting tiny lasers at models of the Earth and trying on wigs around this part of the film, including a scene where he tries on a corset, which at General of Fear is like, sniffing at, he's like, you look ridiculous in your corset, you pompous little man.
Yeah.
It's too early to get to the best joke, the only joke in
the movie. Yeah, well, that comes later.
Yeah.
What happens now is once Dick manages to climb up the ladder and get out of the sewer and back up into the castle or whatever they're in, fucking Todd is like, hey, I'm gonna kill you. And then Terry Garr manages to like push his hand down. So yeah, instead he shoots at the ground.
Yeah, she distracts him by being like, oh, I've chosen you now, Todd Spingo. You're a real man.
Not like these Earthmen.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, well, then I'll kill your husband. And she's like, no. But the blast knocks him out of a window and he falls down. Out of the window.
And he falls several stories and just lands on his face and nothing happens to him.
Yep, he just gets up and goes, ow. But then he has like a ship now.
Yeah, he crawls into some ship that exists here and then Dave goes flying out and they shoot missiles at him and this whole thing is fucking stupid.
He's flying backwards away from the missiles at the same speed as the missiles but going, ah.
And then there's a big button that says... get out of here.
Yeah, get out quickly, the button says.
And he presses it, and then the missiles hit the ship, and everyone thinks he's dead, but he got launched into the air and again lands from several stories up onto his face, and nothing happens to
him. And then his ejector seat lands next to him, powered by balloons.
Yay.
Now he's out in the middle of the vast desert of the planet Spingo, which appears to be about the size of a small town, like the whole planet.
Yeah.
So he's just wandering around in the desert grunting to himself when he is captured by people in bird masks.
Oh, no. And they're going to kill him because they think he's a destroyer because he's still in the uniform that he took.
Yeah, his ill-fitting destroyer uniform. And he's like, I'm not a destroyer. Besides, I've been looking for someone in a bird mask. I've been looking for you, Cirque of the White Bird.
Yes, I met your father,
Raph. No, your father I did.
They're like, ooh, how do we know? Oh, well, he gave me these important instructions for you. You have to open my pants. Oh, he does know, Father.
And then they take their masks off, and one of them is a generic muscle dude, and the woman is Kathy Ireland.
Yay, Kathy Ireland. She's very pretty. Hooray.
That's what she's here for.
Yep, she certainly has... like maybe three or four lines and is in this movie.
Yes, indeedles.
So now Dick is basically becoming the leader of this tribe of exiled people, the ones who were loyal to the old king and who hate the new dictatorship regime.
Uh-huh.
And he's the leader because he's the smartest one there.
He's the smartest man on the planet because these people are not only stupid, but they're all fully aware that they're stupid.
Yeah, that's one of the weird things to me is they're like, oh, yeah, we're all idiots here. And like, how do you know?
Yeah, what's your basis for comparison?
Like, who was it that was here that you knew was smarter than everyone? That you were like, oh, we're all idiots.
Yeah. They show him their collection of stolen weapons, including several destroyer laser guns, which fire a wavy beam.
Yep.
The Metroid wave beam seems to be the bog standard. A light grenade, as it's referred to, which you put it on the ground, and then the next person who picks it up, it disappears them.
Yeah. Now, that is the one gag that I remember from the movie from watching it as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
The whole, like, oh, you put it down, and then it says, pick me up on it. Oh, it's ingenious.
It's a dastardly plan, because it just says, pick me up on it. So.
And so, you know, someone's going to come up and pick it up, and what are they going to do?
They're going to get zapperized.
Yeah, so that gag of people just continuously picking this up one right after the other, I was like, oh, that was the only thing that stuck with me from this movie was that gag.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not ha-ha funny, but it's at least like, oh, that's kind of a clever gag for stupid people to fall for.
Yes.
Like, I get it. I mm-hmm. get what you're going for. And at least it's something instead of nothing, which is most of this movie.
This follows into the second joke, which is the muscle dude who Cirk, being like, this is one of our weapons. And he hoists a rock. And Geoffrey Jones is like, that is a rock. Yes, let me show you how it operates.
You just need to throw it like this. And then he hits one of the other guys in the head with a rock.
And that's the joke.
That's the joke.
And then I went outside and ran over a turtle with a car. Anyway, then they have a fancy dancy, and he has to attend. And because he's the guest of honor, he has to eat the gross hunter mushroom monster.
And then the dance is all these sexy ladies in, like, bikini outfits are dancing around him.
And John, do you get it? Do you get the thing where he didn't want to go anywhere or do any dancing or have to eat any crazy food? And now he's eaten a mushroom monster's toe and he's gone dancing with foreign ladies?
It's like all those things he said at the beginning of the movie that he hated, he had to do.
And it turned out they're not that bad.
I mean, except for the fact that the mushroom monster was disgusting and that he was very uncomfortable when ladies were dancing around him.
Yes.
So it turns out that, no, he actually just doesn't like any of those things.
Now, Kathy Ireland, notably, does not have to go dancing with all the dancing ladies.
No.
Instead, he's like, I don't want to dance. I don't like dancing. And she's like, you have to dance. It's in your honor. And he's like, okay. So he goes out there and a bunch of day laborers shake their tits at him.
Great. Although I would like that if it was just day laborers.
Oh, I should have said day extras or whatever.
But, yeah.
But yeah, day labor. Like, they picked up a bunch of people from in front of a Home Depot and they're like,
here, shake your tits at this guy. All right.
Whatever.
You give me a ride. $5, sure.
You give me a ride back to the Home Depot, yeah? And a glass of lemonade.
So that's what's happening with them over at fucking Spango's big mansion.
House of Pancakes.
Spango's House of Pangos. General Afeer goes to see Marge, and we find out that he actually hates John Lovitz.
Yeah, surprise, right?
He's like, this is supposed to be a love potion that will make you fall in love with Todd, but I've replaced it with just water, and I'm going to inject you with it, although this would probably be a very bad idea to just inject someone with water.
Yes, that would not be a good thing to do to someone.
But I'm going to do it anyway, and we're going to pretend like it's fine.
I mean, realistically, it's not as dangerous as injecting them with the air.
No.
So if the syringe had some air in it, then that would have been really bad.
But, yeah.
But instead,
in the middle of him explaining, he's like, oh, I hate Todd because he's the worst, and he's ruining this planet, and he's a pompous dill hole. And then Todd's right behind him, and he's like, oh, pompous am I?
Well, then I'll have you shot.
Then he's like, great, I'm going to use this love potion on Marge. And the general had told her, like, just play along.
Mm-hmm.
So she plays along, and then he's like, oh, right, now I'm going to have you kill General Afeer, you traitor. He's like, oh, I hate you. You're the worst. You know, well, what do you think now? And injects him with the love potion that's just water. And he's like, oh, you're so pretty. Can you marry me? This is a joke. Because a guy marrying another guy, hilarious.
I'm sorry, John. I left the mic for a second because I hated this.
Well, how do you feel about it now?
This was worse than when the people actually have sex and the bootblack just wanted to watch them almost have sex. This isn't ribald at all.
Yeah. So his whole plan for killing the general is he's going to put him inside the death laser so when he shoots Earth, it also just shoots through the middle of him.
Yeah. What a dastardly plan indeed.
Great.
So... Meanwhile, they send Marge. Marge is now imprisoned for a little while, and this is when she finally... Oh, no, wait. She had the conversation with Blatt a long time ago. Never mind. Yeah. But this is the part where the actual only funny joke in the movie takes place, so at least that's finally going to happen.
Yeah. John Lovitz preparing for his marriage to Marge is essentially in a yellow Elvis outfit, mm-hmm. wearing a pompadour, and he's like... Which one do you think is better, mutton chops or goatee? And he's got those two twins from Terminator 2
mm-hmm.
that, you know, the police officers that die with the coffee.
Yeah.
So he's got them, and he asks one of them, and he's like, mutton chops? No, you're wrong. Now shoot yourself in the head.
And the guy's like, oh, and he shoots himself in the head.
All right, you, mutton chops or goatee? Mutton chops.
Yeah. You too. And they shoot. It was the only funny joke in the movie.
That was it. That was the one part in this movie I went.
They both said the same thing.
That's the one part where them being stupid wasn't just them being like, oops, I ran into a wall. I was like, oh, it's a gag. It's a joke about being dumb. I love it.
So this movie has Budnick, and it has the brothers from Terminator 2, and it has a scary scene where a big truck almost runs over the main characters. So it feels like it's got a lot of Terminator 2 connections.
There's a lot of Terminator 2 energy in this.
Yeah, that's a weird thing to notice, isn't it? When did Terminator 2 come out?
I don't know. Sometimes.
Pretty much the same time.
Around-ish.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird thing that happened.
Kind of.
A thing occurred.
So then we have to go back to the camp, and they have their... plan all set to go get into the castle. Is they made a big wood statue of Todd, and it says, "In Todd we trust."
Yes, and also it's noted that Todd has had a lot of statues of himself throughout the course of the film.
So they're gonna do
a Trojan
horse, yeah. But it's Todd.
Oh, also there was a joke in there that was almost kind of okay, which was we wear the bird costumes to camouflage ourselves in the wilderness.
So when the destroyers see us, we can just go, boo, boo, and they'll think we're birds.
Yeah, and Jeffrey Jones is like, are there birds this big on your planet? No. Then those are bad costumes, are they not?
Why would they fool anyone? And instead of being like, oh, because we're all idiots.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, no, these costumes don't work.
Oh, no, we've been cursed with wisdom. The worst curse of all. This worked until this exact moment. Up until now, the destroyers would see us and go, da, big birds.
Oh, no, those aren't peoples. Them's is boids.
Them's is big boids. I better go tell Muggsy. I'm Muggsy. I forget how this works.
Left behind at the camp is a sign that says, Earthman's bed, do not disturb.
Mm-hmm.
And underneath the covers of that, he has left the light grenade.
Yes.
And so this is the scene where we see everyone just going like, huh, look, they left a light grenade. And then, you know, he disappears and the guy walks over and he's like, oh, that's dastardly. And someone goes, what happened? And he picks it up, a light grenade. And then he dies. And it just sort of goes on.
I didn't see this. I was getting our Postmates food.
Yeah.
But that is an amusing joke that I would have also almost been like kind of, huh. About.
Yeah, it's why it's the only thing I remembered from this, because I was like, hey, look, it's a thing. Again, playing off the fact that your entire movie is based on a planet full of idiots,
mm-hmm.
and finally, you're doing something with it.
Yeah. Well, eventually, it turns out that John Lovitz has chosen both the goat. Oh, because the coda on the joke where he gets the two guards to shoot themselves in the head is he goes, you know, they're actually not that wrong about these mutton chops.
Great.
To some fish or dog or something.
Some dog guard is there.
And he's just like, ugh. And he puts both his paws on his head because that's a dog thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, the wedding comes.
Mm-hmm.
All over the place. And
yeah, it's messy. It gets right in everybody's hair. Yeah, the wedding comes, and there's a priest who looks like Lloyd Kaufman.
And
is.
And is. No, they get everyone together, and right when they're trying to say the vow or the I do's, there's a knock at the door.
Yeah.
And it's the statue.
There's a statue here, sir, for you.
Oh, well, let me go see it.
I better go look at this statue that someone gave me.
Hmm, this is obviously a trap, because I don't look like that. I'm not that ugly.
That's an ugly statue. In fact, bring it inside so everyone can see how much it doesn't look like me.
Yeah, great. So, indeed, they bring it in, and there's a big old fight. They fight, fight, fight.
They fight, 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 fight.
And everyone's kung fu fighting, and then it turns out that Kathy Ireland is the long-lost love that Wallace Shawn's character had. And
yeah.
Isn't that funny? Because Wallace Shawn's a little guy, and Kathy Ireland is attractive. They're in love.
She's a statuesque model wearing a bikini, and he's a little tiny fella wearing stupid alien hair for no reason.
Yeah, but they're in love, and that's the joke.
And she picks him up and spins him around because she's the tall one.
Hey, comedy.
It's not right when the woman is the tall one.
Oh, man. How weird.
Oh, the amusement and the jollity.
It never ends here mm-hmm. on Mom and Dad Save the World. Ugh. So,
bad
yeah.
comedies are so much worse than bad serious movies.
It's true. It's just, you're just watching and being like, I'm sad because I see what you're trying to do and none of it works.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm like, when I'm watching it, I'm like, you know, I'm not a famous Hollywood movie-makey guy. But if I was, that would be my title.
Yeah. In the credits, it would say movie-makey guy.
Yeah. But I feel like I could do so much good punch-up on this film.
Right?
There's so much easy punch-up for this.
Ugh. So,
like, he could have ran right past Kathy Ireland and picked up one of those fish.
The fish.
That would have been funnier.
Hey.
Or one of the dog, or one of the mushrooms. Anything.
Who knows?
Or just he runs right past him and picks up John Lovitz.
Yeah.
See, we've already been in a scene together. This doesn't make any sense.
I laughed at it, and it was funny.
Yeah, it wouldn't work for very long, because it's my standard Descent into Chaos style of comedy. But, yeah.
So, the fight eventually spills into the room with the big laser in it, and it's basically just Dick versus Todd.
Yeah, in 1,099 of my Spingo seconds, we'll destroy the Earth.
Yep. And they fight, and
it is almost kind of funny when they fight, because they're both pathetic.
Yeah. At one point, the best part of this fight, outside of them just sort of whiffing, trying to hit each other, is they stop, and they're like, all right, let's take a break. And they just kind of breathe heavily, because mm-hmm. they're both sweaty, overweight dudes.
Yeah.
And you're like, I get it. I get what you're doing here.
I like the beginning of the fight, where the swords land in both their hands, and like, ha-ha! And now you'll die. And then they just kind of go, with their swords at each other.
Just waving it around. And then, like, Dick manages to hit the sword that is in Todd's hand. He's like, ow, ow.
Ah, ow. And it hurts Dick to do that, too.
Yeah. He's like, oh.
Oh, this sucks. I don't like sword. Neither of them seem to like sword fighting.
No.
Don't like sword fighting. That's a hanging offense. Get a rope.
So they fight. And that's great. And then they win and turn off the laser.
Yeah, basically, Spingo manages to get his hands on a small version of the Death Laser Blaster and starts shooting red lightning at him. But then he is distracted temporarily, Spingo is, by Terry Garr just saying his name. And then Dick just points steam at him because the planet of idiots has convenient steam vents everywhere.
Well, yeah. Well, it hit a pipe where steam was going, apparently.
Yeah.
So steam's pouring out that he can aim.
So they just shoot him with some steam, And then the two of them work together to shove him down one of those elevator shafts.
Yeah, he goes right down into the sewer where them evil mushroom guys are.
And he's like, ah, ha, 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 ah, the end.
But they shut down the laser, and then Eric Idle shows up fully shaved and whatnot, and the king is back and restored, and happiness is in the land, and they're going to send these two back home.
There's a line here for Eric Idle where he's like, I have reversed the polarity of the magneto beam, and it should send the two of them home immediately. And no one says anything, so he just repeats himself. He's just goes, I just said, which at first I realized that the joke in the movie is supposed to be that no one responded to his joke, so he just said it again to get applause.
See, I think it was he said something intelligent, and that was the joke.
Oh, I thought the joke was that he said that and then couldn't believe he had said that because it was such a stupid sci-fi line. So he's just like, guys, listen to this dumb shit I just said.
No.
I reversed the Tetrion field.
No. For me, it's, oh, yeah, he said something that had anything to do with science or intelligence, because he was also like, and we'll send them home post-haste.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I get it. You said something that wasn't dumb.
Yeah, he said a smart thing because because the people of Spingo aren't as stupid. Well, I don't know if it's still Spingo.
Yeah, I don't know what the planet is now.
Yeah.
I guess Raff.
It might be Raff. That's a cool but rude planet.
Yeah.
Thank
so
you.
They get blasted back to Earth, and oh, they pull up into the house, and the kids come out to meet them, and they're like, oh, the car's all messed up, and also Dad looks like a weird barbarian covered with a bandolier of rocks, and Mom's in the dumbest outfit ever.
Yeah, she's kind of in some sort of pink dress thing.
Yeah, it's a giant poofy, like a Victorian prom dress is what it looks like.
Yes. A lot of steampunk type Victorian prom. Not a lot of gears and shit, just like more hoops and bands and crap that was probably actually a thing.
But, you know, at the same time, lots of like little silky things and taffeta and shit.
And fins and just, oh, it's just too much. It's just too much for both of them. And Jeffrey Jones, curse his gross heart, is wearing like no pants, just a loincloth.
Yeah.
It's just not cool, dude. Not cool.
And so at that point,
up yours, movie makey guy.
They're like, wow, that's great. I can't believe you're back. Did you have a good time in Santa Barbara? Oh, yes. And then it ends with them doing another slideshow where they're like, and here's your dad in front of Saturn, and here's that nice blart.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, wow, this all happened in Santa Barbara? Oh, a little north of there. A yuck. End of movie.
I'm sorry, John. I stepped away from the mic again because I hated that. So, yeah, the movie ends with them showing a slideshow of dogs and stuff. And for some reason, they've decided to keep their adventure a secret.
Yep.
Why?
I mean, probably because no one would believe them.
I guess. I don't know. I don't care.
Oh, well.
I fucking this. Why did they make this movie?
I don't know.
When they didn't, it wasn't necessary.
So yeah, there you go. Now, we're going to have our best and worst here. And Jeff, I'm going to ask you your favorite thing in this movie.
And you're probably going to stipulate that I can't be like the food I was eating during the movie, and I can't say that my least favorite thing was the movie that was on.
Exactly.
Yeah, all right.
What was your favorite thing in the movie?
Mutton chops.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, that was the funniest, only funny line in the movie. So there you go. That was my favorite part. You?
I'm going to
just take the other
guy. I'll take the light grenade.
Light grenade, yeah.
The concept of the grenade that kills you when you pick it up and idiots keep picking it up. There you go. That's a gag that is actually appropriate.
Yeah.
Congratulations, you did it.
Yeah.
And the worst thing in the movie for you.
There was a specific point in the film where they could have told a really funny joke, and then they didn't.
And it was the film.
And then they did that every 2 minutes for the rest of the movie.
Give me a specific thing, Jeff.
You son of a bitch. Okay, the absolute worst joke in the... I'm just going to say the opening sequence, because it doesn't do anything to set up these characters and why you'd want to like them and learn anything about them.
Oh, yeah.
Before they get picked up by the magneto beam, you're just like, I hate these guys. Please don't tell me they're going to be the stars of a full movie.
And indeed they are.
Okay. Great. So yeah, the intro, because it set up how much I wasn't going to like these characters, and indeed I did not. And you, John, the worst thing about this movie?
Probably the worst thing in this movie for me is going to be, I want to say the scene with the like tribe where they're doing the dancing thing, and it's just,
oh, it's just an excuse to show shaking boobs.
Yeah, it's just ladies come out and shake their tits, and I'm like, why?
Yeah.
This didn't need to happen.
Yeah, it's like an old school Hollywood thing where they were like, hang on, we forgot to put shaking tits in this movie. I'm sorry, did you want to put Shaking Stevens in this movie? He can sing that Merry Christmas song.
I'm sorry,
British,
did you
want to
put Shadow Stevens in this movie? You can take him for the block.
I'm sorry, did you want to put Shadow the Hedgehog in this movie? He's got a gun, you know.
He's got a gun!
I would have preferred this movie it had Shadow the Hedgehog in it.
I mean, it couldn't have been worse.
No.
Speaking of things that are bad, we're going to give this a rating. Each of us, 0 to 5, gives the movie a total rating out of 10. Jeff...
0.5.
Okay.
I'm not going to equivocate on this one.
That's fine.
This movie fucking sucked. I hated this.
Yeah, I know you did.
I was, at one point throughout the course of the film, I was just like, hey, John, I recommend we just turn this off. And you were like, oh, but it's too late for us to start watching another movie. And I was like, no, let's just turn this off and lie down.
Let's just not.
Let's just turn this off, go to the woods, lie down, and let nature make use of us.
Just let the world reclaim us.
Uh-huh. I want to be dirt by this time next month.
I will go ahead and give it a 1, because it is technically a movie, I guess. I don't even know why I'm doing that.
I reserve the 0 for things that are technically not films.
So... 1.5 mm-hmm. out of 10 for Mom and Dad Save the World. This is real bad. I said at the beginning that I likened this to someone who is trying to make a Mel Brooks film.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, this very much has the feel, like, it's just, it has the same energy as another movie that is sort of ish around this, called Stay Tuned with John Ritter.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And it feels like Stay Tuned is the better version of this.
Yeah, I could see that.
But now I'm not sure if I only think that because, again, I haven't seen it in forever, because it also came out in 92, and it also has Jeffrey Jones in it.
Now, is it a space movie?
No, they get sucked into the television that Satan gives them.
Oh, that's right. I have seen that. Yeah. Because I was like, wait, isn't the John Ritter space movie Batteries Not Included?
He's not in that.
He's not
in Batteries Not Included, and that's an Earth movie. Just with little tiny aliens.
Yeah. But there's aliens. I mean, Earth Girls Are Easy I count as a space movie, too.
Nah.
Which would you rather watch between this and Earth Girls Are Easy?
I mean, obviously, Earth Girls Are Easy.
I mean, it's really bad, but at least...
Yeah, but at least Jeff Goldblum's there.
Yeah. And who are the other two? It's like Brendan Fraser and Marlon Wayans or something like that?
I don't know.
I can't remember.
But yeah. So I feel like part of me wants to go ahead and say we'll do Stay Tuned as well.
So just stay tuned for that.
I want to know if Stay Tuned is also this bad or if it's better than this.
I want to know if he really loves me.
I want to know what love is. And I want you to show me.
Okay, it's two little naked babies, and one of them is like...
Love is.
Opening up... Yes, and...
thank you for joining us for this episode where we hate everything.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, where a movie just absolutely destroyed our souls.
Uh-huh.
If you would like us to continue doing this and torturing ourselves for your amusement, please go over to patreon.com/systemmastery. Support us at any level. Anything helps. You can help keep this show on the air and make it so that Jeff doesn't wander out into the woods to let nature reclaim him.
Perhaps I will lay down near a river so that beavers may make use of me.
Perhaps I will just walk into the ocean and be gone.
Hey, that's a pretty good Toad the Wet Sprocket song.
Walk on the ocean.
It's a good song.
It is.
Yeah.
Toad the Wet Sprocket. Pretty good.
Good band. Good band. They had another song, Fall Down, I think it's called. Also a good song.
It's called Falling Down.
Falling Down.
And they remade it into The Joker.
Stars Michael Douglas. I've heard at this point that that Joker movie at least has an ending where he's in prison or something.
Great.
It doesn't end Joker triumphant, which was, I think, a lot of people's fear about that movie, that it's basically what if an incel was right, the movie.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Ugh. And hey, you know, speaking of, there's still time if you want to go onto the website and vote for what we're going to go see in theaters.
Oh, is Todd Phillips' Joker one of the options?
I believe so.
Okay.
I may not have put it on there because I hate it, but I could have put it on there because I hate it.
I can't imagine it's completely hate-worthy. I feel like it's just going to be kind of a why of a movie more
than
anything
else.
See,
I feel like I'll hate it. Even though I sure it's competently directed and whatnot.
Phoenix is a good actor. I'm sure it's... I mean, the thing is, I read a while ago that he put out one of those press releases where he was like, oh, you know, you go a little mad when you play the Joker. And I was like, man, I miss the days where, like, Cesar Romero wasn't bullshitting some magazine with that.
Where Cesar Romero was like, I refuse to shave my mustache, fuck you.
Yeah. I don't know. I put on a fucking sock with white paint on it, and I said, hoo, hoo, hoo. No, I didn't have to go a little crazy to play the role.
Yeah.
And Jack Nicholson was like, I don't know, I just played Jack Nicholson again.
I was just me, but they tried to put paint on me.
I don't know if you noticed, but I pretty much am always just this one guy. But since those two, everyone's always got to be like, oh, playing the Joker takes you to a dark place.
Yeah,
you aren't sure you can come up from it.
Ugh.
But at least I found out that Joaquin Phoenix didn't say that. He said he went a little crazy, losing 55 pounds for the movie.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, which I'm like, I'm more inclined to believe than the whole, like, playing the clown prince of crime makes you crazy.
Ugh. Ugh. Get out of here, Jared Leto.
It'd be funny if everyone said that about every supervillain role.
You know, playing Gorilla Grodd. Getting into the mind of a murderous ape, why, it makes you go a little crazy.
Uma Thurman all like, oh, I found a little of myself in Poison Ivy, and I was scared about what I found. Yes, when I played the Mr. Freeze, I found my own heart colder and colder. I had to warm it with stogies.
Even now, I still use various ice ponds. I cannot stop.
It's just the Joker, right? Anyone who plays the Joker is like, yeah, it drives you crazy. But when they play like another crazy villain, they're like, eh, whatever. It's just a job.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Ugh. Anyway,
yeah.
You can go to systemmasterypodcast.com and go to the Movie Mastery tab in theaters now, and there will be our poll for what we're going to see in theaters this month.
Mm-hmm.
You still got another couple weeks to vote on that. And other than that, though,
man, did you notice how strongly my enthusiasm just shifted when we weren't talking about Mom and Dad Save the World anymore?
Right?
I was just like, woohoo, let's talk about the Joker. Fuck
hey,
yeah.
I've got energy about things that aren't this movie. It's not that I'm tired. It's that this movie has drained the life from me.
Yeah, it was dour. It was like spending several minutes in the draining machine from Princess Bride.
Oh, I thought you were going to say in that weird crystal seat from Dark Crystal.
Yeah, either way. Yeah. Either I'm getting all my precious essence sucked out by a Skeksis.
Ooh, that's hot.
Yeah, or the six-fingered man is draining my life away so he can study me.
And there you go.
And there you have it. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much. We'll be back in another couple weeks with more Movie Mastery. And until then, you have a good one.